Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning. Welcome to the 27th show of Atlanta Legal Experts. My name is Charlotte Merritt, and I am hosting this morning. So watch out. Emily could not make it. This could be an interesting show. We are so excited to be here for Atlanta Legal Experts. This show is brought to you by Peachtree Offices. We always have a fantastic virtual office available for you, and 3A Law Management, everything you need for your law practice. And today I've got a co-host. They did not trust me to do this on my own.
It's a danger.
And I don't think they should have put us together. This could be bad.
You know, I'm looking across the table at you, and this may be a dangerous combination. Your wily smile and subtle tones.
And by the way, this is Josh Schiffer with Chanko Schiffer. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name's Josh Schiffer. I'm really happy to be back. Thank you, Charlotte, for the invite, and thank you, Emily. We miss you this morning. I'm Josh Schiffer, and I practice law. I know that's a surprise to everybody on a legal radio show. We primarily do criminal defense, a lot of DUI and domestic violence work, but also we have a significant practice area in catastrophic injuries, a lot of times dealing with children and other vulnerable people in vulnerable situations, such as the elderly, people that have mental and physical disabilities. They get taken advantage by a lot of people out in society, and we go and protect them on that. That's kind of the feel-good part of the law.
And he wears a cape.
I need to pat him on his back.
There you go.
Also with us this morning, we have Brad Parcells, Vera June Starks, and Rachel Lazarus. And behind the scenes, hiding from us, we have Rich Casanova.
I'm not hiding, but that sounds good to me.
They can't see you.
I'm so excited. I'm going to be taking pictures for social media, and it's all y'all's.
I'm going to jump right into it because we only have an hour, and Josh and I tend to be chatty, so we're going to jump right in. The first guest we are going to speak with this morning is Brad Parcells. He is an amazing coach. You can find him on LinkedIn.
Thank you,
and I'm just going to read a quick bio on him. His core value system is a give to give versus a give to get. He's passionate about serving and helping others reach their fullest potential. He has a mantra, and that is to be authentic and trust your instincts. There's no substitute for trust, so be your authentic self. He is no longer with the corporate nonprofit. He's escaped corporate and nonprofit sales and marketing guy turned professional coach and speaker on leadership. As a certified coach, he can help you find amazing results. And as a speaker, he helps organizations and leaders understand a unique form of leadership that uses a process of leading energy so that it works for you rather than against you. Some of the things that he's motivated to do: identify values, drivers, increase self-awareness, facilitate greater decision-making. I'm going to let him go on because he's signaling me that I am messing this up. Tell me about what you do because you know better than I do.
Well, you hit it really well. Yes, I am a old corporate and nonprofit executive that decided to get into coaching. I got into coaching because it's a service mentality. It's helping others achieve what they want to achieve, and it's really cool in being part of that process of helping people do that. And that's why I get it. So I typically focus on men and women, 35 and up, in corporate and in nonprofit environments, who are very motivated and very focused on achieving a more fulfilled lifestyle, or leadership role, or whatever they want to do in their organization. Think about coaching, Charlotte. It's all driven by the client. It's their focus. It isn't my focus. It isn't my ego. It isn't my agenda walking into that conversation. It is strictly driven by the client, and that's the beauty of it. So it's very different modality from consulting or therapy or mentoring. Very different. If you want me to explain a little bit about that, I can.
Well,
Josh, you
Brad,
gave a question.
Yeah, no, Brad, I was going to say, all right, so I'm kind of right in your demographic, late 30s business owner. But when I hear coach, I go back to, you know, high school, middle school. What does a coach do for me professionally? What can a coach help me with?
Well, that's a nice question. What do you want professionally out of your life?
Man, that's a great, great question. Do you help people find kind of the solution or the answer to what they're looking for to get more business satisfaction?
Well, that's a good question, Josh. Coaching is a way of – a coach understands that the client has the answers within inside them. There's something inhibiting. There's something interfering them from achieving that success, whether it's a limiting belief, whether it's assumption that is off cue, or whether it's a gremlin that's sitting on their shoulder by saying, you're not good enough. And so they stop the process, and they don't fully fulfill it. So it's through a great deal of assessments. Assessments are done prior to an engagement of really understanding one's drivers and one's values. What do they want to work on specifically with a lot of clarity through questioning? And it's through that conversation that the client begins to open up and expand about what they want to work on, whatever that is.
So you mentioned that there's some assessment. Can you tell me a little bit about what the process is about how to bring a coach into your professional life and your professional practice?
Very simply, it's a conversation, whether that's a face-to-face conversation, a phone conversation, an introduction. People call me, I meet them, we just engage in a conversation to see if coaching or whatever aspects of their life, their business, their profession isn't working for them. Like lawyers, like doctors, like engineers, like CPAs are very highly technical skilled professionals, right? But they're no different from anybody else who wants to live life more optimally. And how do you define optimally is all based on how the client defines optimal performance and what that means. So there's a, going back to your question, Josh, there's a lot of questions that happen. I send a pre-questionnaire out. If somebody wants to engage in a coaching relationship with me, and we agree on the value and what that all means to them, I send them a questionnaire, which is a 5 or 6 page questionnaire that they fill out that helps them focus on clarity for themselves, okay? We use that instrument in their first meeting in terms of figuring out and them figuring out through powerful questions what they want to focus on with clarity, with purpose, with conviction.
So it's very much a self-directed. You're taking your client and actually helping them discover what the best path is for them.
That is absolutely correct. Whatever they want to work on. So when I work on, I work with attorneys. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, what do you work with an attorney on? Well, in today's environment, we know that getting new business in a law firm is a very difficult thing and is expected to do in a partnership, in an environment.
Absolutely.
So how does, you're very highly skilled professionals in your technical applications, but how do I have the right conversations with the right people at the right time to drive new opportunities? You weren't taught that in law school, right? So I coach a lot of lawyers relative to generating business opportunities. How do you do that? You know, where do you go? How do you network? How do you have those conversations with people? I coach lawyers and in terms of difficult relationships with clients, difficult relationships with partners, difficult situations with their teams. I coach them on emotional intelligence and the value of emotional intelligence. I've coached lawyers about the effectiveness of work and life. It's not about balance. It's about when generally we find people who work is going well, then life tends to benefit. When life is working well, work tends to benefit generally. So it's all about just developing and understanding what that effectiveness is for each individual or team or organization.
Well, I have a question then.
Yes.
I work with a lot of solo practitioners and small firms, and I do see them struggle with balancing their passion for the law with growing their business. It seems like this could be a really long process. How long is your relationship with a typical law client or any client?
Charles, that's a great question. Typically, an engagement with an individual starts at 3 months. That's the minimum. It can go 6 months. It can go 9 months. You look at Michael Jordan, the great basketball player from North Carolina and Chicago Bulls. He had a coach throughout his entire process. Michael was one of those guys who understood the effectiveness of having a coach make him better at what he was doing. So an engagement can be 3 months. Meeting, generally, no less than 3 times a month. It can be twice a month, but if it goes once a month, we generally find it's not very effective for both parties. I know lawyers are very busy people, so it is a commitment. So you have to have, it's not a commitment financially. It's time, energy, and other resources, and it can be very painful process, coaching, in terms of exposing and opening up and having that increased self-awareness about oneself. Can be very emotional time, and there are exercises that are done. So 3 months is the minimum.
I really see a lot of value, and I've seen this process exist. Are there some good, let me rephrase that.
Like a good lawyer.
Yeah, there you go. That's why I get paid for it. What tools and skills from your background and how did you get into this process? What part of your background makes you the effective coach? And what kind of value can you bring to somebody like a small practitioner?
Good question, Josh. My background has always been in business development, always having relationship conversations with people, okay? I used to work for an organization a long time ago that did professional sales development and training, worldwide training network called Sandler Training. We did sales development, management development, and customer service development. It was all about technique, behavior, and attitude. And through that, I was not only delivering that process out on the street trying to garner new business, but I was also in the training classrooms of 30 to 40 people, as well as individual coaching through that process. When I left that, Josh, there was a huge void in me.
In your profession, yeah.
In my life, in terms of helping and serving others. Now, in the sales and business development role, you can always look at, I'm here to help the possible client, whatever they want to try to achieve. So that's why I decided to get back into coaching and get professionally certified. There is a certification body in coaching called the International Coaching Federation.
Could you tell us a little bit more about that? And I've also got to say, one of the things I like about the idea of coaching is I'm a strong supporter of the use of psychology and psychological tools within a business environment. It sounds like you're touching on a lot of that and have the training and certification to work with some of that stuff.
Well, again, if long as the client, that's yes, and that's true, because there's a lot of psychology in selling or having conversations with the right people and keeping them comfortable in that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
No different from coaching. Coaching is an avenue to ask questions to find out clearly what is going on with an individual or organization or team situation, and really delving into the pain aspects of one or a team or an organization, what they're trying to achieve, why are they not trying to achieve it, what is going on, what's stopping them from that process. So from a psychology standpoint, yes, there are elements of psychology that are used, but not in a manipulative way. It's all generating through powerful, closed, open-ended questions.
Seems like there's a great venue for processing the challenges that small practitioners face, and you almost are providing a venue for them and a sounding board to work on what their individual barriers that are preventing them from being successful are.
Very much so. Coaching is a practice that is growing significantly in the corporate world. Executives want this because I am an outside resource. I am not an inside, quote-unquote, sycophant or yes person. I'm going to tell them exactly what I'm hearing, right?
That independence, I think, is really key to the role that you play.
Yeah, very good point.
I have another question.
Yes.
I was reading through your bio, and it said that you are not only the certified coach, but an energy leadership master practitioner. And I have honestly no idea what it means. And so if you could tell me a little bit more about what that is and how you're applying it to, like you said, those corporate clients who want the outside help, but also our solo practitioners and small firms.
Okay, great question. Thank you for asking. Energy leadership. Let me tell you about a little bit about energy leadership. It is a powerful assessment tool that we use on people and organizations. Think about the universe, okay? The universe has positive and energy charges as human beings. Those charges are going and firing daily with us, either up and down all day long, okay? So these charges are our energy, all right, when we look at it that way. And so our energy and how we experience our life, right, is determined by our thoughts, emotions, and actions. So everyone has a mix of different kinds of energies, and they show up differently and uniquely to each individual, okay? When you think of energy, think of a stock on the New York Stock Exchange. As the stock starts out in the daily price, right, the information is coming into the stock market, and it's impacting and fluctuating the price of that stock. And by the end of the day, that closing price reflects that activity, okay? So like humans, we are kind of like stocks in a way. So when our energy is constantly flowing up and down, our thoughts, emotion, and actions go up and down, okay? So our feelings and thoughts are impacted by situations, relationships, conversations that we're having. So feelings such as joy, non-judgment, motivation, inspiration tend to raise the price of our stock. Feelings of victimization, blaming others, anger tends to lower our price of our stock, okay? So when you think of energy, you know, energy, when you talk to a leader, they go, energy? Well, that's all shishi foo-foo. Not at all. It's very impactful. You look at some of the greatest leaders, what qualities do they have? What qualities will inspire customers? What qualities will encourage colleagues? What qualities in an individual will provide engagement and loyalty with employees? That word is energy. And energy is a very powerful tool to create one's success, team success and organizational success. So how we perceive things going on in our life, whether it's stress or how we look at things normally in our daily life, our energy and where we see that and how we respond to that is all this understanding of energy levels, whether it's creative or destructive. Creative energy is all about positiveness. all power, inspiration, motivation. You can call it catabolic. Positive energy is that way. Destructive energy or catabolic energy is that all based on worry, doubt, you know, I'm not good enough, that victimization kind of thing. So when you're looking at creative energy, you're looking, you're taking your viewpoint, and I have my hands next to my head. If you open up those binders and you're able to see a much broader viewpoint with positive, creative, anabolic energy, that's what this assessment and coaching process does. It helps take somebody with blinders on, because there your decisions and options are limited, and opens that up and that prism into much wider focus.
I think I kind of get where you're going with this, but are there any really good case studies? And again, I also want to know exactly how people can get in touch with you and what kind of relationship that entails.
So what's your first question?
Case studies, really. I hear energy. I hear, you know, good flow. I'm a nuts and bolts, dollars and cents kind of guy. I'm touchy-feely.
What's this energy stuff?
Yeah, touchy-feely doesn't really float my boat, you know, dollars and cents.
Well,
do.
Josh, talk to me after the show.
Absolutely. Are there? I'm just trying to make sure that our listeners understand and can translate into their language what exactly you can bring for their practice, and I want to know how you can benefit them specifically.
Through the coaching process, one can develop an element of focus. What that focus is, the clarity of exactly what they want to work on, what's stopping them from getting there. Do they have those blinders on, or they're going to have the ability to expand that exposure based on their understanding of situations that have happened in the past for them and how they dealt with them? It's all about their thoughts, their emotions, and their actions. That's how it all leads into it. And energy leadership has been around since the 70s. It was actually developed by the leader of the certification coaching program I went through. And there are 7 levels of leadership, based on one where they're at. There are a lot of case studies that I could share with anyone if they want to reach out to me. And how they can reach out to me is this. They can either call me on my cell at 404-409-7226. And my email is brad@aperio, A-P-E-R-I-O, coaching.net. So thank you. And I hope all of you have going to go vote today. Critical election.
I would like to know which one has more energy after the show. That I was supposed to vote this morning. I was going to say, Josh, you didn't read his full LinkedIn profile. Right there it says you can get a free 40-minute consultation to see if coaching fits. So maybe these GTLA, aggressive child lawyers, be a harder sell for you, right, Brad?
No, nothing's hard.
It's what's so take that, Charlotte.
What's interfering with them, Charlotte?
Charlotte, I really want to keep moving on with the next guest that we have. We have Ms. Vera Starks in the studio this morning. Vera's here from Pink Pump Soiree, and she's also a local lawyer with the law office of Vera L. June. Attorney Vera Sparks has an academic and professional credentials dating back to Stetson University College of Law, where she got her JD. She's worked in politics for U.S. Rep. Sheila Jackson Lee, and has also worked in the court system down at Pinellas County, Florida, a place I know quite well. She's done a lot of civil litigation, business law, and a few other practice areas. She's currently licensed to practice in both Georgia and Florida, which is not the easiest dual bar to maintain. I always joke at how Florida loves picking the pockets of every East Coast lawyer around.
Every lawyer.
She maintains offices both in the Dunwoody metro Atlanta area as well as Orlando, and stays very active in a number of professional organizations. One that's very, very close to my heart, the Georgia Association of Black Women Attorneys. I know many of the leaders in there, and I've worked with them for years. She's also involved with the Atlanta Bar Association and the Georgia Trial Lawyers Association, which, as we all know, stands up for our rights to have free access to the courts, something that I'm very passionate about. Vera, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Vera, you've come today and to talk about your practice a little bit, but also really specifically to talk about this Pink Pumps Soiree that you guys are holding. Tell us about what's going on with that event and what it supports.
Okay, well, first I'll start off with the Pink Pump Soiree. It's on November 6th, which is this Thursday, so we're in our final push. And it's a fundraising event that's designed to raise funds for Sisters Network, Atlanta Southern Region. and raise funds for breast cancer survivors who have been either diagnosed and are currently treating or recovering from a diagnosis of breast cancer. And the difference in this particular event is that we are actually looking to raise funds for survivors. A lot of survivors, once they get diagnosed, they have to either stop their job or they go to a one-income household because they're in the process of treating and there's a reduction in income. But life still goes on. Your bills don't reduce. So we want to try to raise funds to alleviate some of that financial stress so that our survivors can focus on getting better and healing and living as opposed to how are they going to meet their bills.
Will you tell us a little bit about exactly what the charity has been able to accomplish so far? I know it's a relatively new organization. You guys are making a big splash this year. Tell us what you've been able to accomplish already and what your goals are for this upcoming year.
Okay. So Pink Pumps Soiree, this is our inaugural soiree, and this is our first event. This is our first fundraising event, and Sisters Network, however, has been around in the Atlanta region for over a year, and so they have been working to try to raise awareness, talk about prevention, to talk about they've done the breast cancer walk in October. It was on October 4th this year, and their gala is coming up in March. And so we partnered with them in order to raise funds specifically for their BCAP program, which is the program that provides funds to the survivors and those that are in need of some financial assistance. And this is looking, turning out to be maybe their signature event to raise those funds each year. And this is our inaugural event, so we're very excited about the reception that we've received from the community, especially the legal community, and we're excited about where it can go. I believe that, you know, you can always, if you just start out and put one foot in front of the other, you'll be amazed at where you wind up. And that's kind of the story with this Pink Pump Soiree, is that I decided, actually, I was just like, you know, I'm going to do this. And I had been thinking about it for 2 years. And I said that this year I was going to put legs to it. And I put some legs to it, and it just started running. And so, you know, here we are.
Can you tell us about why you started this? You've been thinking about it for 2 years, yes. And you really got the energy. And tell your listeners exactly what motivated you.
So my story with breast cancer is that I have relatives, close relatives, that have had breast cancer. My Aunt Dolly, who's my mom's baby sister, passed away from breast cancer at 49. And I have another cousin on my father's side. My cousin Minnie passed away from breast cancer this year in March. And she was under the age of 50 as well. And so I have just been stirred up by their legacy and their strength just in their fight. And so just celebrating their strength and celebrating, you know, the struggle that they went through, I wanted to be able to assist other survivors and alleviate some of the pressure of having to deal with the finances as well as trying to, you know, fight for your life. And those are some of the things that inspired me. I was sheltered from some of the financial struggles of my Aunt Dolly because I was younger. And once I find out, that just does not resonate with me as being something that's right for a person who has been diagnosed with an illness that they have to figure out, you know, how they're going to pay their bills as well. And so that's kind of the spirit behind the Pink Pump Soiree and the spirit behind joining with Sisters Network to raise money for a fund that can go to survivors. We don't have anything against research. I think research is awesome. But I also have this soft spot in my heart for the survivors themselves. And, you know, research will help down the road, but sometimes you just need a little financial assistance to just alleviate some of the stress that you might be experiencing just from going through the recovery and the treatment.
I think as a litigator, you're used to getting a result, and research is so long-term. I hope that comes. I hope that works out. And yes. It will. They will find an answer, but
yes.
As a litigator, I'm pretty sure you're like, no, someone needs help today and I can help them.
Right. And that's kind of, you know, as a lawyer, I think a lot of us came into the practice of law with some, you know, novel ideas about justice and about, you know, being social and having those, you know, equitable ideas. And once you get into practice, sometimes you lose some of that in, you know, advocating for the win or advocating for your client that may not necessarily, you know, be in the best, you know, position. And, you know, sometimes we forget about the fact that, you know, our practice can have purpose too, other than just generating money for ourselves. But we can, you know, have a practice with a purpose or be a charitable business and, you know, build our business with a purpose in mind to have a societal impact.
Okay.
What are your goals and aspirations for actually growing the charity as a whole? What's your goalpost?
My goal for Pink Pumps Soiree is to make it at least an annual event where we are raising funds for breast cancer survivors, and that can go to every year that grows. This year, our goal, and in our world, the attorney world, our goal is $6,000. And that has been like an eye-opener for me as far as working to generate the sponsorships and to do the ticket sales and so forth. I'm trial by fire, I guess, is how I'm learning about this. And the passion is what's driving me to, you know, want to perfect how this event is going to take place. So this is our inaugural event. We're looking to raise $6,000 for the fund itself. And, you know, we're still looking for sponsors and we're still pushing the ticket sales. But our goal, our end goal, is to raise as much money in the upcoming years to support our breast cancer survivors, because then we can impact more people and have more depth in the impact, as opposed to just providing 1 month of relief. Maybe it can be 6 months of relief as opposed to 1 month.
So let's talk about what is on everybody's mind. Let's talk about this party.
Yes.
Give me the details.
Oh, you're in for a treat. I mean, it's going to be a wonderful event. We have a DJ. We have gourmet food. It's going to be heavy hors d'oeuvres. I did the tasting, and you will not be disappointed. The truffle macaroni and cheese is absolutely to die for. And so we're excited about that. It's an open wine bar. And so your drinks are included in the ticket price. And it's going to be at the Emrich Center on November 6th from 6:30 to 9. So if after work you're ready to come down and, you know, have some appetizers, some drinks, some good food, some good music, networking, then this is where you want to be at.
I'd love to talk a little bit more about the networking. This is a very pro-business venue that you're at right now.
Yes.
Talk to us about who you're expecting to have this exposed to. Is a lot of lawyers, I'm going to imagine.
Yes, a lot of lawyers. There's going to be a lot of lawyers, some doctors. We have some sponsors that have been very generous in their sponsorship, Uniquely Virtual. And then we also have American Clinics for Preventive Medicine and American Clinics for Preventive Medicine and Herman Morris Law Firm, my law firm. So the Georgia Association of Black Women Attorneys is also a sponsor. So there will be a lot of professionals on hand. My network spans more than just lawyers, but some of our we have a committee, and their networks span more than just lawyers as well. So we're looking for professionals and lawyers to be in attendance, as well as some doctors and so forth, medical professionals, to come out, have a good time, network, and you know, exchange information, but also celebrate a good cause. The ticket prices are $50, and that is inclusive of everything that you'll experience that night, the music, the food,
the
as well as the wine. It's an open wine bar and signature cocktail, exactly. So we're very excited about that.
Vera, I had a question. How is the money distributed in terms of going to the survivors?
So what happens is Sisters Network Atlanta has a program called the BCAP program. And that particular program is a fund that is set up for the distribution of the money. And so there's an application process, and you have to have been diagnosed, of course, with breast cancer. And there's a process that goes through the application. And as long as you have a financial need, for assistance, then if the funds are there, you'll receive assistance. And it's going to be distributed through Sisters Network Atlanta Southern Region.
And this is a valid 501(c)(3).
Yes. Sisters Network started in Houston, Texas. It was founded in 1994, and it's been around for several years. There's several, almost about 15 or 16 chapters in the southern region. And so it is a national network. It's expanding, and it's looking to grow. And so that's what we are trying to do, is help it grow, help the BCAP program become a staple in our community, so that survivors know if they need some financial assistance, they can go to Sisters Network and get that.
I'm going to give them a quick plug, because I'm the geek who's usually behind the scenes. You can find them at sistersnetworkinc.org. So if you want to learn more about Sisters Network, they've got a great site. I've just dug all the way through it, so you can find out more about them.
Yes, and if you want to purchase tickets, you can go to www.pinkpumpssoiree.com. That's Pink Pumps with an S, Soiree, SOIREE.com. And you can purchase your tickets there or through Eventbrite.
Will you also tell us a little bit about how your work with this organization and how your dedication to a nonprofit has affected your actual practice? I know a number of lawyers are balancing the good works of doing some charity evaluation and work and contributing that way, along with running a successful business. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Believe it or not, it really comes down to, one, you feel better in your practice because you do feel like you have a sense of purpose as you are out there doing your practice and doing your work. But also, you know, one of the things that especially solo practitioners, when they're starting their practice, is they don't tend to understand the value of a network. And even in the nonprofit arena, that is a network. And oftentimes, you know, when you're in the trenches working with nonprofits, I've done nonprofit work for years. Those are the most loyal people because they are loyal to the cause. And when they see that you're loyal as well to that specific cause, they would want to grow your business. And it's because they see that you're working for this cause and this purpose, and they see the dedication that you have for that. And that translates for them into how you would represent them, into how you would advocate for them, into how you, you know, run your practice and how you are as an attorney. And so I found that when I'm doing nonprofit work and, you know, working in the community, I feel that people tend to gravitate more towards you because that whole facade of, you know, that's presented by the media about attorneys as far as just being about money and flash and, you know, not so much about truth and justice. All of that is kind of out the window when you're out building a house for Habitat Humanity, or when you're out trying to raise money for a nonprofit organization, or when you are sitting on a board trying to figure out how you're going to distribute Thanksgiving baskets to the community. That, you know, then your humanity comes through, and that people gravitate towards that.
I think you're really hitting on something that I've had a lot of value in my practice. I know a lot of other people do as well, where if you go out there and do good stuff and don't worry about the money and the success and money will come. People find that you're so dedicated to just doing the right thing. Some of my clients really chase after us because of that mentality. I'm really happy to hear your experience in the same thing. Tell us a little bit about your practice.
Okay. I actually am a civil and commercial litigator. I hail from the state of Florida, and I've been practicing since 2006. I'm licensed in both state and federal in the Middle District of Florida and the Northern District of Georgia. And my practice is pretty much litigation. And so I do breach of contract complaints. I do shareholder disputes. I've done some premises liability defense. I do contracts. And it runs the range just because as a solo practitioner, you do have the ability to evaluate on a case-by-case basis. And so I have done some employment litigation. My phrase to myself is, if it can be litigated and you have good facts, I'll take it. Got to have good facts.
I want to bring it back to the money of the Pink Pump Soiree again. Mm-hmm. I know that the tickets are $50 a piece, which, by the way, that's about what I spend on a bottle of wine, not to mention unlimited wine and truffle macaroni. So this is sounding really good, but there's more ways, I noticed, mm-hmm. to raise money for the event.
Yes.
There's an auction.
Yes, we are going to actually have a silent auction. And we are, of course, this is our inaugural one. So we have several items, one of which is a designer handbag that was donated by Belle Maurice, which is an online handbag company. And then also we have an organic basket that was donated by one of our vendors as well. And then we have a few other things that will be on the list. We have a designer dress from Le Amour, which is an online fashion designer as well. And so we'll be auctioning those things off. It's a silent auction. And as you come in, you'll be able to see them on display. You'll be able to determine if you want to, you know, place a bid or not. And at the end of the evening, it's whatever the highest bid is. That's who, you know, in turn will receive the item. And we're going to raise additional funds that way.
That sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Any other names of people that we're going to be seeing down here? I know that this is often a time that we talk about who we're hanging out with. One of my favorite subjects.
You know, you'll have to be surprised. I mean, we have had some great interest in the event. It's been announced on the radio and so forth. And so you'll have to come and see who's there.
It certainly sounds like an exciting project. And I really appreciate the fact that it's going directly to the people in need. Mm-hmm. This isn't one of those charitable organizations where you're worried the money's going to get sucked up in administration. It's obvious from your passion about this. This is something that means a lot to you, and it's a direct way to contribute to the people who actually are in need.
Yes.
And I really applaud you on that. That's the mark to me of a really good charitable organization.
And speaking of amazing charitable organizations, our final guest today is working with two of them. We have the honor to have Rachel. I'm gonna say it wrong. Lazarus. Oh,
got it right. That's right.
She's a staff attorney for Atlanta Legal Aid Society's Gwinnett County office, and she is also the director of the Gwinnett Pro Bono Project. As project director, Rachel works with local private attorneys to expand pro bono services to residents in Georgia's fastest growing county, and I believe the biggest. In 2012, Rachel successfully appealed a long-standing court practice of requiring recent violence before granting protective orders. In Lewis versus Lewis, the Court of Appeals agreed with Rachel's argument that since the Family Violence Act does not contain time limits, the court abused its discretion by requiring the recent violence. So that is fantastic.
Which was quite an opinion I can talk about with you afterwards.
Oh, thank you. That sounds exciting.
I love having all these people who like to fight in a room.
Especially the domestic violence arena. It's
ironic, isn't it?
It is.
I'm going to brag about her a little bit. She obtained her JD in 2001 from the University of Southern California School of Law, where she participated in the school's first family violence clinic. Obviously, this has been a passion for a long time. While there, she studied with legal greats, including constitutional scholar
Erwin Chemerinsky.
Thank you. I was...
Mm-hmm. You're taking away all my fun by filling her in on how to say that.
Did I mention that I'm usually the behind-the-scenes geek? You don't have to type things and say them. Anyway, a Fulton County Daily Report rising star, Rachel is a member in good standing of the state bars of Georgia and California and is also licensed to practice before the United States District Court for the Northern District of Georgia and the Southern District of California. Nice. You know how to travel well. You know where the good weather is.
Exactly.
She's an active member of the Gwinnett County Bar Association, teaches religious school at the Congregation Beth Shalom. Rachel lives in Dunwoody with her husband and two daughters.
You got it all right. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And I will never try to say that guy's last name.
Chemerinsky's a local rock star, really. He's a big deal.
He's a national rock star, and he was a lot of fun to have as a professor, let me tell you.
He really has written some of the most leading and cutting-edge materials on constitutional law. Any opportunity to work with a guy like that, even if I horribly disagree with him on so many positions, it's just an exciting guy to know. Thanks so much for coming in here,
Rachel.
Thank
you so much for having me. I'm excited to get to talk about it, everything.
Absolutely. We're also the show's friends with some of the other people involved in the Atlanta pro bono universe and legal aid universe. Marty Ellen's a great guy, known him for years. tell us a little bit about what's going on in Gwinnett County, because generally we think about Fulton County as being the destination for Atlanta Legal Aid.
Absolutely, but Gwinnett County actually is our fastest growing county in Georgia, and it is also, sadly, not something we're so proud of, but the fastest growing poverty population in the state of Georgia. So clearly legal aid and pro bono services are something that's really, really necessary out there. As director of the pro bono project, I get to something that Vera was saying before, talking about putting the humanity back into practice. I get to work with people every day to get to do that and to figure out how they can add in these direct services to people who need the help as part of their law practice. So we work with the attorneys placing the cases. The reason that we need pro bono attorneys, particularly in Gwinnett, but really all over, is that legal aid can only handle about 50% of the demand in the state of Georgia. There are approximately 1,000 cases of people, poor people needing assistance for every legal aid attorney, and that's on national average.
And let me just be clear, these are not public defender criminal cases.
Absolutely not. So the one of the biggest things that people don't understand is, well, how are you different from public defender? We do civil legal assistance, so we're specifically focusing on civil matters person to person. This has nothing to do, we specifically don't do criminal law. There is a very set and established system for providing free lawyers for people who are accused of crimes. Everyone knows their Miranda rights. If you can't afford an attorney, one will be appointed.
Even if it doesn't work anymore.
Even if it doesn't always work anymore. But that's the general idea. But what's amazing is people don't realize that's not always the case in civil. And they don't realize how important having an attorney in a civil case can be. Because while you're not facing jail time, you could be facing loss of custody, loss of income, loss of your home, loss of your health. And those are all things that are really important to people also.
Is there kind of a greatest hits list of maybe the top five things that people come and apply for assistance from legal aid?
Absolutely. So the number one thing that people come to for us is in the domestic relations world. That's about 55% of legal aid's practice. We certainly see that in Gwinnett County, and it bears out with the numbers. You know, a huge number of filings in the state of Georgia.
Now, you're not the divorce lawyer for the indigent.
To some extent, yeah. We actually, that's exactly what we are. So people come to us, and so we see a number of different scenarios when people come to us for whether it's divorce or custody. Because the two don't always come at the same time.
No, they don't.
or child support or whatever it is. In some cases, it's people where the whole family has been living in poverty. So both spouses are low income, often working poor, paycheck to paycheck. The other area where we see a lot of our work, particularly out in Gwinnett County, is where one spouse, typically the wife, but not always, one spouse has been totally financially dependent on the other spouse. And so it's interesting because we get into some of these high money situations, but our client doesn't have any access to it. Particularly in one of our biggest focuses in legal aid in our domestic violence, in our domestic relations practice, is cases of involving domestic violence and family violence. It is something I've been involved in for a long time. And it's something that really we see in the majority of the cases that we accept, because the power differential between a batterer and the person who's being battered, the survivor, is so great that they simply are not on the same plane. They're not on equal bargaining power. So even with all the other things that they may have access to in court, without an attorney, ultimately the survivor is still subject to the issues of power and control that are going to come up in domestic violence cases.
I know there's a lot of academic literature on specifically that imbalance and the codependent relationship. I'd also like you to speak just briefly on how the diverse population of Gwinnett impacts that. I'm a big fan of Gwinnett County, especially the restaurant scene, And there is more diversity in Gwinnett County than I think any other county in the state of Georgia.
Did you know that 32% of people who don't speak English live in Gwinnett County alone?
That does not surprise me, and I order lunch from them on a routine basis. There's no better destination for the real stuff right off the boat than Gwinnett County.
So we have two major issues that come up with both within legal aid and with the attorneys who take these pro bono cases. The first one is language barrier. Like I said, 32% of Georgians who have limited English proficiency live in Gwinnett County. And the vast majority live in the metropolitan Atlanta area, which is the area that Atlanta Legal Aid serves. So first of all, if someone can't speak English or they speak enough English to get by on a daily basis, but you know, all of a sudden you're throwing court words at them.
Legalese does not translate well into Vietnamese or Laotian or, you know.
Anything? No, anything. It really doesn't. And so you're taking terms that would be confusing even for a native English speaker. Someone who has limited English proficiency is going to be even further behind. And so that really creates a huge barrier for them to be able to access justice, to know to go into court, and what does it mean to serve someone? I mean, that's a word that doesn't translate particularly well in a lot of languages. What does it mean, you know, to hire a process server? What does it mean to do a deposition or discovery?
Well, and it would be so confusing if you take the perspective of someone who was not raised here in the United States and you say that a temporary protective order, it's not criminal, but it's served by a guy with a gun and a badge. That's a really difficult concept to kind of wrap your brain around. And it's tough stuff. This is real law that is really upfront in our daily lives.
Absolutely. It's affecting people of every walk of life. And what you mentioned there is also cultural, a lot of cultural barriers. So in addition to the language barriers, when people are coming from other countries, other cultures, there can be huge stigmas against accessing help, against calling police if you need it, even against going to court in family law matters. You shouldn't be, you know, airing this laundry outside of the community. We get a lot of people who get a lot of pressure from religious organizations. They also get support from their religious organizations. But that they are, the cultural barriers that come up can really prevent someone from even knowing where to start and knowing how to get out of a bad situation. The other thing that we see a lot of is people who, even though most people in the world are good, people who prey on those who might have different cultural or language barriers. So people who will shove a bunch of contract paperwork in front of someone that they know absolutely doesn't speak English. They may have been speaking a different language with them, say at a car dealership, and all of a sudden they get a ton of paperwork shoved in front of them and say, oh, don't worry about it, just sign here. A lot of people believe, well, this person spoke my language, so therefore they're going to watch out for me, and they sign. Well, now they've just agreed to ridiculous percentages of interest, something that they're never going to be able to pay, and then they're going to risk losing this vehicle that they just put down all their money for. Mm-hmm. And then that's going to lead to, how do you get to work, and how do you get to school, and how do you keep up the rest of your life?
And on top of that, there is the, and I'll keep politics out of it mostly, but the added complication mostly of our immigration situation right now. I know that's a hot topic in Gwinnett County. It is a 287G county, which means you can be automatically deported out of their county jail, mm-hmm. unlike most counties in Georgia. I'll also say that domestic violence is widely known as being an absolute bar to continuing your naturalization process, and while that isn't a policy with a good intent, it can also be wrongfully used against people. It's a domestic violence I find fascinating because it is both sides very often have a valid position, even if I don't agree with it.
And where, so the 287G facility, and if people don't know what that is, it means that as soon as someone's arrested for a criminal offense, including traffic in some cases, an immigration check is done at the jail, and there are actually ICE officials at the jail in Gwinnett County. That raises a number of different issues. The biggest one for us at Illegal Aid is that our TPOs, our domestic violence protective orders, are handled at the jail. So we are asking people, in some cases, who are undocumented to walk into the jail to get assistance. Now, we can assure them over and over, and it's true, they're not checking immigration status of people who are filing TPOs. I don't know how much better that makes people feel in a lot of cases. On the flip side, Atlanta Legal Aid actually does have restrictions from the federal government on what immigration statuses we can assist with. So if someone is a victim of domestic violence and what we're doing can help them stop the domestic violence, or if they're a victim of trafficking, we can help someone regardless of their immigration status. But in other cases, if it's a consumer issue, a bankruptcy issue, things like that, in a lot of cases, all we can do is tell them where they can go for assistance. So we are limited in that.
And you mentioned something that's been in the news here recently a lot, the word trafficking. A lot of people hear trafficking and think about drug dealers and things like that. But really, the most valuable thing getting trafficked right now
is people.
Mm-hmm. There was just a big bust in Dunwoody. A 26-member sex ring involving high-end prostitutes.
Yeah, like down the street from me. It was a little disturbing.
I was quite interested at the location. When I think Dunwoody, I think, nice executive homes kind of packed together in North Dakota. Not a high-end prostitution ring. Talk to me a little bit about the human trafficking that exists here in Atlanta. This isn't a faraway problem.
No, Atlanta is one of the biggest hubs for human trafficking, both sexual trafficking, which is what most people are familiar with and which is certainly the most damaging, but also employment trafficking. People who are brought in here essentially as slave labor. And a lot of people don't realize both of those are protected under the trafficking laws.
Slavery in Georgia?
Why? Yeah, never.
Why? How could you say such a thing?
There are social services agencies that work with trafficking, but we are one of the only legal agencies that is able to assist people. And people think, well, trafficking, you need criminal, you need the FBI, you need someone to come in and arrest the traffickers. Well, there are other issues. For example, we had a situation in our office where a woman had a child by her trafficker. We think it was by her trafficker. And her parents, who were not so supportive of her, and this was a domestic woman, this was an American citizen born here who was being sexually trafficked. Her parents were trying to take custody away, basically saying that she was unfit to have custody of this child after the trafficking came to light. I mean, talk about kicking someone while they're down.
And it creates a tremendous amount of conflict from a representational standpoint.
What do you mean?
Well, you've got a duty specifically to your client, whoever your client is, but then there's the concurrent duties to, kind of society and your mission as legal aid, and then also to a child, and you've got a child in a very fragile and vulnerable situation. That's got to be tough from an ethical and moral perspective as a lawyer.
Absolutely. And in this particular circumstance, she had already left the trafficking behind. She was now in a shelter for women who've been trafficked. Certainly, if there was still active trafficking going on, that would create other issues. But again, looking out for someone who is being trafficked, in addition to a custody issue, there can actually be consumer issues that come up. People who, for example, they have found out that they've been trafficked or that they've been engaged in some kind of trafficking behavior, they lose their other job or they get evicted from the place where they're living. And again, those are areas that someone needs an attorney to help them try to not make the situation worse, not force them to go even deeper into some kind of an exploitative system.
So talk to me about those attorneys that you've got. I mean, this is a pro bono organization. So tell me more. How should the private bar support legal aid, and what's the impact for these private attorneys who are coming to assist these people who are just so greatly in need?
So within, say, for example, Gwinnett County, we have 6 staff attorneys in our office. Obviously, we can't handle every low-income person in this very large county.
Largest growing county.
Exactly. So we then work with the private bar. What we do is we recruit attorneys to come in and to do pro bono services. One of the biggest advantages to the attorneys to do pro bono services through the Gwinnett Pro Bono Project, which is a division of legal aid, is that we screen the clients to make sure that they really are indigent, that their income really is what they're saying it is. This is not what some attorneys refer to as the involuntary pro bono when the client just doesn't pay. These are people who truly cannot afford to even make their basic ends meet, let alone try to pay a lawyer on top of it. We then also look at the facts of the situation, make sure it's a good case. Like Vera said, it's all about the facts at the end. So we screen the case, we check for income eligibility, we confirm the facts, we put together the file, and then it's ready for the attorney. Some attorneys, if someone comes into them and pulls on their heartstrings, will actually do what we call a reverse referral, and we really encourage those, where they tell the person, okay, go through the pro bono project, and if they say you qualify and refer it back to me, then I'll take your case pro bono. And that's a huge benefit for the attorney who is now doing work that they came here to do, really helping someone in need. But they're making sure that this is someone who is truly in need and whose case is truly one that they want to devote their time to.
And remember, our pro bono, it's not just an aspirational goal. You're a member of a professional organization. What makes us professionals is our set of duties that we self-regulate with, and that includes giving back to the community.
It's in the state bar ethics rules that we are required to do a certain amount of pro bono services each year.
And I think it's really encouraging to see how many attorneys are taking advantage of organizations like Atlanta Legal Aid. Can you tell us a little bit more about how many attorneys and what the process is for an attorney to get involved with taking cases?
Absolutely. So every Atlanta Legal Aid office in the metro area, as well as Georgia Legal Services Program, which operates throughout the rest of Georgia.
Supported by your bar dues.
When you check off that amount, it goes to a Georgia Legal Services Program. So Atlanta Legal Aid certainly appreciates any additional donations, since we don't get any of that money. But every one of those offices has a pro bono project of some kind. So whether it's the Gwinnett Pro Bono Project or Cobb Justice Foundation in Cobb County, we partner with Atlanta Volunteer Lawyers Foundation, DeKalb Lawyers Volunteer Foundation. Clayton County Pro Bono Project is also operated through Legal Aid. So there's always an opportunity anywhere in the metro area to get involved. So for example, in Gwinnett County, which is the project that I direct, someone can go online to gwinnettprobono.atlantalegalaid.org and sign up right there online. The attorney specifies what types of cases they want to take. So if you are primarily a commercial litigator and you really want to just do things more in the consumer area, we're not going to suddenly throw a contested custody case at you. But if you're family law, we're not going to ask you to do a bankruptcy. So now on the flip side, we also offer mentoring and training, particularly for new attorneys or for attorneys who are looking to expand their practice. This can be absolutely invaluable. So for example, if someone wants to do a bankruptcy, we have an experienced bankruptcy attorney sit down with them, go through the process. We help them get certified to file online, make sure that all their admissions are up to date and everything. And then the mentoring attorney will work with them through one or two cases to make sure that they know what they're doing.
Talk about an amazing service for young practitioners. I'm always reminded how tough it is for especially graduates from the last several years to get their foot in the door. That's an amazing educational opportunity.
And I'm so pleased how many young attorneys and new attorneys are taking advantage of that. We've nearly doubled our roles, and our pro bono roles in the past couple of years in Gwinnett County. The other thing, and I'm just going to quickly mention, that Gwinnett County offers is we do free CLEs every month on the third Wednesday of the month. And for anyone who's an active member taking three cases or more during the year, we offer those CLEs totally for free. So again, for solo practitioners, young practitioners, that's a huge benefit, and that's really helped grow our program as well.
I know we're running out of time, so I just want to loop around and make sure that everybody listening can get in contact with all three of our great guests today. I'm going to go back to Brad. Again, tell us a little bit about how to get in touch with you.
Certainly. Phone number 404-409-7226 or...
And you're looking primarily for people that are in a professional practice looking to improve their practice by working on themselves, working on the horse.
primarily themselves or if they're a member of a smaller law firm, teams, partnership environment, and the effectiveness of that.
Excellent. And let's talk just for a quick second again about the soiree and how they get in touch with you.
Pink Pump Soiree, www.pinkpumps.com. I also practice law, and my website is www.atlantalitigationfirm.com. And you can reach us by phone, 404-334-7198.
Thank you so much, Ms. Vera. And then finally, Rachel.
So if you're interested in the Gwinnett Pro Bono Project, you can go online to gwinnettprobono.atlantalegalaid.org. You can always go on to atlantalegalaid.org to get information about any of the programs that Atlanta Legal Aid does. And you can reach me at rmlazarus@atlantalegalaid.org.
And you can find everyone's full contact information, a little bit about what they do, on the Atlanta Legal Experts radio show website, al.businessradiox.com. And thank you so much for listening. This is Charlotte Merritt with Peachtree Offices. And Atlanta Legal Experts was brought to you today by Peachtree Offices and 3A Law Management. Thank you so much.
And for everybody, this is Josh Schiffer thanking Rich Casanova for being our board operator. Thank you again, Charlotte and Emily. We miss you. Hope to see you again next time. Thank you all so much for listening.